Next Step 636, August 13, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Wait, you really can't escape the politics, can you? Because it's the politicians and the politics that put together what we call an economy, in which people survive, in which services and items are paid for. And then you need that money, the finances. Thanks to the politics, there is an economy. Thanks to the economy, there is a means of trades of goods and services. And thanks to that economy, you're able to purchase. Yeah, you're able to purchase, well, what commonly most people do purchase, a Bible. Well, yeah, I know there's a lot of other common things that you purchase, but point being that that Bible is even dependent on an economy, and that Bible that you have is dependent on some politicians, or maybe a better way of saying it is that they're all interconnected. Everything is interconnected, isn't it? Welcome. That's what we do over here. We kind of connect the dots. We find that interconnectedness of just about everything in life. And I want to welcome you because we have a lot to share today, a lot to talk about. I'm coming back from a service on Sunday. We were at church, just like you were, just like everybody was. We were at church on that two-dimensional screen. Yeah, this Sunday, I had the luxury of being at home and watching not only one service, but giving myself a chance to listen to many, many different services, some in different parts of the world. Here in the United States, I started early Sunday morning with the East Coast broadcasts that were out there. And much like a television set, now we're getting used to it, aren't we? Yeah, we're like switching through channels. Well, we're surfing the net, going from one church's feed to the next. And I know, if somebody told me about this, I'd say, you can't do that. Well, you know what? People are doing it. And it's giving us a chance to really kind of like look in and listen. For me, it was very important because this past Sunday, as I shared with you last week, we all knew that they were going to do Hokianki's Requiem service for the deaths in Beirut that occurred. Now it's up to 170 deaths in Beirut since the explosion last week. And we knew that was going to happen, and as it should, we should have the Requiem. We should remember the loss of life. But sadly, apart from our small little group over here, there was no Requiem for the people who died in Hiroshima 75 years earlier. Yeah, you know, we all love those rounded numbers. And we like the five numbers, especially when they're divisible by 25. 25th, 50th, 75th, 100th anniversary of an event, of something that took place. Was the 75th anniversary of the dropping of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And unfortunately, Armenians went silent on this one. I mention it only because it means something to me, only because we've been fighting for that here on Armadoxy here with the Next Step. We've been fighting about the importance of us being part of a world community. The pain that we have when we say tzavatanim, let me take your pain. It's the understanding that, hey, we're all in this together and that we have to feel each other's pain. And for somebody to understand that, hey, we went through a genocide 100 years ago. For others to understand that an explosion took place in Beirut, which killed so many people. It's important for us to also be able to extend ourselves and say that we recognize some evil, some tragedy has taken place in your history. I can't remember if I shared this with you or not, but last week when the explosion took place in Beirut, it was very interesting for me because I had absolutely nobody. I've never had a relative in Beirut. My family's not from Beirut. We've never been there. I've had many friends who've come from Beirut, but to be that moved, that shaken up, you would think that I had some kind of roots there. I had somebody there. But no. This feeling that a part of you has been lost. But I guess it's not weird. We're talking about Hiroshima, aren't we? Hiroshima, who do we have in Hiroshima or Nagasaki? And yet, as an individual, as a human being, isn't there a part of you that's lost? Isn't there a part of you that hurts? And certainly when we saw the devastation in Beirut, there's a part of us that hurts. At least for me, it did. And Beirut, you know, it was one of the centers of Armenian civilization. Actually, I would say before the genocide, you had these two major centers. The Western Armenian was in Istanbul or Constantinople. Eastern Armenian, the center was in Tiflis, what they call Tbilisi. Outside of Armenia, of course, these. And what we had after the genocide is this exodus from the ancient homelands, the exile. People were exiled from their homes. And we went to all different sections of the world, all different places that would be open to allow people to come in and find a safe haven. And in the Middle East, there were some key hotspots. Aleppo, of course, Halab. In Iraq, Baghdad. Egypt, you had Cairo. Iran, Tehran, although Tehran had a longer history of Armenian population there. But in Lebanon, a big center, Beirut. And just off of Beirut is Antilles, which the Sea of Cilicia was moved there, and political reasons, of course, but it is there. So you've got this reality there. And, you know, I was thinking about it, and all of a sudden, just a couple nights ago, I get this email. One of the nice things. One of the nice things of having this digital footprint, of being all over the net with writings and podcasts and videos, is that you're pretty accessible. So a couple nights ago, I get this email from a young man. He says, you know, I think we may be related. Your family came from Sidi Hisar. So did my mother and Bun. We're going on. And he shared with me a couple pictures from a book. And I remembered, hey, there was a book called Sidi Hisar about the village my grandmother was from. So I quickly went and dug it up in my library, in my vast library, which, by the way, I will take an opportunity to mention. If there are books you are looking for, if I could be of service, I am slowly trying to get rid of my library. And there are some really, really gems in there that I'd be happy to share with you. That's the little commercial, okay? So I went and I dug up the book and I started reading. And it's fascinating because it's a pretty large book. I'd say about 400 or 500 pages. And it has pictures and stories of the people in the village of Sidi Hisar. And I found my grandmother's picture, my uncle's picture, my grandfather, my uncle, my father's in there. And then a little picture of me, too, when I was 7 or 8 years old. And then I looked at the cover. I looked at everything. And it was printed in Beirut. And it just hit me that, yes, this is one of the centers of Armenian life. And they were able to publish. They were able to freely express themselves as Armenians. Yeah, that freedom is what you need. I remember, I know I shared this with you, it was one of my visits to Armenia, I think it was in 2014, and I'm standing on the balcony looking out at Armenia, knowing that I'm going to be leaving the next day, and I'm looking out at Mount Ararat, and you look at this beautiful field and the life that's there. And it just hit me that, you know, all we really need is peace. You have everything there, everything capable to sustain a beautiful lifestyle. All you really want is peace. And then we find out that all you really want is also economic stability. You want people who are trying to ruin the system, sabotage the system, who are profiting, and you want them out too. Well, there's a lot of things you want. But you get the point. You want peace, whether it's people taking their hands out of the treasury or the peace of just enemies leaving you alone. But for so many years after the genocide, I mean, especially the Soviet Union, you don't have that luxury. And so Beirut became this place where Armenians were able to thrive, really thrive. And so there's a whole history. And what I'm saying is everything is interconnected. And you just need to draw those lines and understand that our only salvation is going to be when we understand that we are interconnected. When you understand that you can't live in a world where everyone's in an island by themselves. We are connected. And tragically, we're seeing this on the world stage now unfolding as more and more people are refusing one another, refusing that aid towards one another. This morning, I was given this horrible, horrible little file. Actually, it was a video that was sent to me by one of our church members. Actually surprised, very surprised. Intelligent person sends this to me. And I watched a minute or two, and it was very hard to watch it. And I said, you know what? In the morning, I take a ride or I walk. Let me just plug it in. I don't need to look at the graphics. I'll just listen. And it was this elaborate conspiracy theory of how the world is being messed up and being controlled by one or two people, and basically the hopelessness that comes with it. And the only way to overcome this is by following this man's prescription of political activism in that particular way. In other words, vote for this candidate and you'll be sure to overcome these conspiracies. And you listen, and what happens is you start believing the stuff that they tell you. Now, rationally, you listen, and you could come up with all kinds of arguments against them. But here's the thing that really annoys me, and it's not just this one little video, one little thing, but more and more people are speaking with this divine authority, and it's irritating me. This morning, I know you're going to say, man, well, what are you doing watching all these stuff, listening to this stuff? Well, here it is. As I'm getting older, I find it easier to put on my shoes and tie those long shoelaces by engaging in stimulating my mind with listening to this or that. So this morning, yes, while getting dressed, I had a guy named Copeland on. Fascinating. He's telling you what God is thinking and how God was disappointed with the fall of Adam and God's greatest angel fell. And of course, alluding to Lucifer and the disappointment God felt, going on and on. And then he stops and he says, this is what it says. And he reads the Bible there. Well, you know, have you ever thought that, you know, that Bible is there as a convenience because you happen to be able to afford that Bible. And I don't mean to make light of this, but, you know, the Bible is God-inspired. It is the breath of God, what we call that. But in reality, most people have those Bibles in their homes because it's been given to them. It's a nice little thing, you know. At some point in your life, you go out and you buy a Bible and it looks good. Within Armenian homes, there's this tradition of when a child is born or baptized, you buy a small little Bible and they put it under the child's head, under the pillow. And I've always said that if you're going to do that, your child's going to wake up one day with a stiff neck. You know, the Bible isn't meant to be under a pillow. It's meant to be read. It's meant to be understood, but also understood within the context of what it is. This is what's very important about Bible study, is not understanding the Bible as literal, but understanding it as truth. In other words, there's a big difference between truth and literal interpretation. It is true. It is God's love expressed. It shares a story of how from beginning of time, God's love is never failing and never ending towards us. What is not factual is some of the items that are spoken about, some of the episodes that are spoken about, you're not to take literally. And you, most importantly, you're supposed to understand it in the context in which it was written. And this is just very, very easy to follow through as anything, as you could imagine. Don't even go back. Don't even go back 2,000 years. Go back to your childhood. I don't know how old you are. Think about things that were very important during your childhood. Let's go back to my childhood. Okay, born in the 50s, 60s, okay? You've got the 60s, you've got things like the Equal Rights Amendment, you got abortion rights, people. Now, these were all things that came about after the 60s, the 72 convention, we saw Nixon, we saw Watergate. These were all things that contributed to the makeup of who I am today. And so when I express myself, when I talk, it's important to know that background. So sometimes people say, why are you getting so upset about civil rights? Don't you know that these are things that are just part of the politics of the day? No, they aren't. These are rights that were fought for. People struggled for. People actually died for these rights that we today take for granted or just pass on. Well, the only way you understand that is that by putting... the only way you understand me having that kind of attitude towards this is to understand where I came from, at what time, at what point. And in the same way, when you start understanding the Bible in the context it was written, you understand it's not a literal piece of work. It's a true piece of work. And so it's very important to understand that, for instance, Matthew went to great pains in his gospel to tie things to the Old Testament. Why? Because he was writing to a Jewish audience, and it was very important to show that Jesus was the completion or the fulfillment of the law and the prophets, whereas John was writing to a Greek audience. And so when he starts off and says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, in other words, that logos, the Word, that's a concept that in Greek philosophy people understood. You go and you talk to the Jew that Matthew was writing to, they wouldn't get that. Just as the Greek that John was writing to wouldn't understand the context of the prophets and the law. And that's, of course, I'm saying it very simplistically, but you get the idea. Context, there's a lot of meaning. There's a lot of importance to context, how something has developed. One of the features that I like on the internet when I do a Bible study, I have to find Bible references. If you go to a Bible site called Bible Gateway, I really like it. There's a multitude of different translations, which make it easy to compare. But you put in a passage, just arbitrarily, let's say, let's pick something that doesn't exist, because if I say it, I know people are going to write to me and say, you know, I'm telling you, this one doesn't exist, okay? Let's say Matthew 32, verses 3 and 4, okay? Yes, do not write to me. I know it doesn't exist. We're using an example. I have to say this. We have literalists. You should see the things people write to me. Okay. Matthew 32, what did I say? 3 and 4. Okay, so what's nice about it, you put it in there and it comes up and Jesus said this and that. There's also a little button there that allows you to see it in context. In other words, how did he say that? And then there's another button that says, let me look at the entire chapter. And it's very important to understand that when Jesus said these things. For instance, did he say this after the miracle of feeding the 5,000? And if so, then you understand that, oh, these people that were following him had been fed by the food, had seen the miracle of Jesus. Did he say this before or after the resurrection of Lazarus? Oh, then you say, ah, the people had not yet seen what Jesus had done to Lazarus. And so you put it in context. And this is very important in understanding our faith when we look at things, to understand in what context it developed. Same thing with stories that we have, Christian stories. What was influencing that story? What made that story come alive? This is the importance of Bible study. Bible study is not just about learning a passage, regurgitating that. You know, you got parakeets that could do that, and sometimes can do it better than human beings. What's important is to understand why Jesus said something like that, why the apostle said something like this, why are these things taking place? And this works positive as well as negative. You know, why was Paul against women? He wasn't against women, but do you understand that, you know, women were basically property at the time. Now, when you understand that, then you see, okay, then you, once you understand what the situation, what the times were like, you then could understand not only why Paul referred to these things in the way he did, why Jesus did some of the things he did. For instance, Jesus goes up to the woman who has lost her son and consoles her. This is unheard of. Jewish men at that time did not go over to women and talk to them, engage in a conversation, did not get close to them. And not only was it a woman, it was a widow. You know what a widow was in that time? A Jewish woman was property, and a Jewish woman had absolutely no rights apart from her husband. When the husband died, she was basically thrown out. It was over for her. There was nothing else to do unless she had a male child. Think about it for a moment, okay? Why does Jesus have compassion for the widows and the orphans? Why does that phrase keep coming up in the New Testament, widows and orphans? Why? Think about it for a moment. A widow is an orphan, understood in the way that they understood it there. You wouldn't understand that today. A woman who loses her husband may sometimes be better off. I don't mean, maybe bad choice of words, excuse me, better off financially, right? Not orphaned, but if the husband has left a nice little endowment, an insurance policy, then she's not an orphan. She's okay. But in that time, in that particular corner of history, they were basically property. So when you understand that, now you start understanding why certain things were being said. You also understand the compassion that Jesus had. That Jesus wasn't playing by the rules. He was creating the rules. He was saying that it's not about women. Women are a creation of God. And it's not right for you to discriminate against them. It's not right for you to be away from them. And Jesus taught by his example, by going up and talking to that woman. And when he healed or resurrected her dead son. It was out of compassion that he had for the woman, something which is not talked about. You talk about it, you understand it. Why? Because you understand the circumstances in that particular time period. It's very important. But for right now, let's take a break, okay? We do every week. We take a break for our song of the day. Gives us a little time to digest what was said and get ready for what's coming up, which is going to be a look at the temptations, not in front of us, but actually the temptations of Christ and perhaps the last one that he had to face. What? Perhaps? Yeah. Coming up. Yeah, we're going to push it. Right now, we're going to take a break and go to a song. Today, this one comes from Down Under. I saw this beautiful presentation made in Sydney, Australia at the Armenian Church. In front of the altar area, there's an area called the chancel area, or what's called the Adeni, and a presentation, a prayer service for the soldiers in Armenia made me feel so good to watch this. There was a little musical interlude. Actually, there was many musical interludes. This is three talented musicians as part of that. Enjoy. When we get back, I'll tell you more about it. Thank you. beautiful, expressive, romantic. It's alive. It's alive. It's poetic. And where else do you celebrate life but within a church? It's taking place in a church. And this to me is just beautiful. Yeah, because you're tying it not with just the time, you're tying it in with all of eternity. And even more special for me is that, you know, I'm emotional tonight when I'm listening to this and I'm watching this. Because, you know, it's just fresh. It's only been 2 months that, you know, people talk about where are the young people, where are the women in the church and everything. We just did it. We just did it. We started producing once a day prayer services offered by the young people, offered by laity, not necessarily having somebody with a collar standing up there. And the response has been incredible. Thousands of people every night watching these services. And now to see this taking place by the ACYA in Sydney, Australia, you realize that the time is right and it's happening. This is from a concert called Songs for Our Soldiers. Unbardeling miasnagan luisov. We are invincible with our united or unified light. That's the subtitle of this concert. Took place August 9th, just a few days ago, in Sydney, Australia, and presented by the ACYA, the young people of that community. And it's part of it's a concert. What I played for you is just a little excerpt from that concert. So I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. Do carve some time. It's a one-hour concert. Make some time. Carve it out. Watch the thing from beginning to end. It will just inspire you. It comes alive, especially in the church. The song that we just heard is called Refuge, and it is the premiere, it says, by the Zella Margosyan Quintet. There's three people playing, so it's like maybe a subset of the quintet. Maybe it's one of those conundrums you find only on the next step. No. It's not that complicated. Actually, it was fantastic because it gave me a chance. Just having the trio there made me look and say, what is this quintet? And I found a webpage very, very inspiring. Had a chance to listen to some more music by the quintet and Zella Margosyan. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. The expression they have is Zella Margosyan Quintet is an aria nominated ethno-jazz band based in Sydney, performing original works and arrangements carrying influences from Armenian traditional music, which was very evident in what we listen to right now. You know, to me, when I read this, it is a concert that is given for the Armenian soldiers of Tavush. And like I said, I'm going to put links on the show notes, not only to the concert, to the band, but also a link on how you can donate. You know, when you see things like that, you're inspired. Please participate in this donation. But you also realize when you see this concert, you realize that soldiers aren't only the ones that carry guns. This kind of talent makes these people soldiers. In other words, they're people who are standing up for something so beautiful. And they're presenting that life and that art, articulating it to the world. That in itself is a battle that is won on artistic platform. And that needs to be encouraged. So God bless the Zella Margosyan Quintet. God bless the ACYA of Sydney, Australia, and most importantly, God bless the Armenian soldiers, whether in Tavush or anywhere else throughout the world. People moving out. People moving in, why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
The Temptations, of course. It doesn't get any better than that. Temptation. What a word, huh? Armenian portsukyun. To be tried, right? Portsel. To be tried. Temptation. In 1988, exactly on this date, a movie came out called The Last Temptation of Christ. And I want to share that with you because, you know, we're talking these days about a lot of people being spokespeople for God, people interpreting as they want to, and taking the pages of Bible as literal instead of understanding the truth that is being spoken to them. Well, in 1988, a major, major controversy happened when Martin Scorsese, yes, that Martin Scorsese, Taxi Driver and an assortment of different movies, who Academy Award nominee and winner and so on, made a movie called The Last Temptation of Christ. And what does that mean, The Last Temptation? Well, throughout Holy Scripture, we see, throughout the Gospels, we see that Jesus is tempted. I know people say, well, he was tempted three times. Yes, those are overt temptations. We read about them in the sense that, I mean, they were pronounced temptations. The evangelist says Jesus was tempted by the tempter, by Satan himself. He was by the devil who tempted Jesus. There were other times that he was tempted, but of course you know the three. We've heard about those, right? First one is he's hungry and says, turn the rocks into bread. And Jesus said, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. The second one, if you're the Son of God, throw yourself down. God's angels will come and minister to you. You won't have a scratch on your head. Jesus said, you're not going to test God. Finally, the devil shows him everything, the riches of this earth, which is his to give. And he says, all this is yours. All you got to do is worship me. Simple. Simple. You can have all this. Just worship me. And Jesus says, away from me, Satan. Get away. Get behind me. Because it's written that you worship the Lord your God and serve him only. Now, those are the distinct temptations, right? The three, the big three that we've always heard about. But there was other temptations, weren't there? I mean, when people come up to him and ask him for favors to heal my child, take care of me, there's times where he's just like looked out at them and say, what is it that you want? Why don't you get it? You're already blessed by God. There's other times where he walks into the temple and he turns over the tables. You say that's a display of anger. Well, it's also a temptation. It's a temptation of how do you love these people when they have destroyed, they have taken what was given to them and destroyed it. So there's this temptation, not necessarily spelled out, but you understand it, right? Well, in the same way, in The Last Temptation of Christ, in this movie, what we see is Jesus is up on the cross. And it's that final moment. It's that final moment when he's up on that cross. That is the last temptation. In other words, throughout his entire life, he's been tempted. He's had feelings that he's had to learn to look at the one at the wedding feast of Cana of Galilee, right? What is that all about? His mother Mary says, son, they've run out of wine. And what does he do? He turns to her and says, it's not my time. What's it to you, woman? That's what he says. What's it to you, woman? And yeah, he then mellows out and he then changes the water into wine. Right? There's the temptation that, hey, wait a minute. You don't get it. You're not part of the plan here. You don't get that. It's not my time right now. There's a temptation to lash out, even to someone as sweet as his mother, Mary. So imagine up on the cross, if you will. The final temptation, devil coming up to him and saying, you know what? You did all this. You healed the people. You helped them out. And now in your hour of need, they've all abandoned you. You're bleeding profusely. You are the Son of God. Why don't you just end this all right now and come off of the cross? And I'll show you what's waiting for you. I'll show you a life where you can have a wife, Mary Magdalene. You could have children. And you will die of old age instead of violently up on this cross. And in the movie, they make this beautiful storyline out of it, where you see Jesus getting older. You see him talking with the older disciples who happen to come by for a cup of coffee or tea or whatever they're going to drink that day. And yeah, Jesus, those were good days we had, right? And finally, what happens is after Jesus sees this temptation, sees this visual, he realizes that he has to give up his life. He realizes he can't live like that. And he utters his famous last words, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." And it ends. Now, this movie came out and people were just bent out of shape. Because, why? Because it showed Jesus having feelings. And even more, showing that Jesus might be human. He might have human feelings. And I was a priest of 5 years. Now, I had one advantage, 6 years. I was serving up in San Jose. I did have one advantage, and that was that this was nothing new to me. I had read this book in college. It was by Nicholas Kazantzakis. Yes, if you are astute, you know he is the author of Zorba the Greek. Nicholas Kazantzakis. And one of the less known books that he had written, in comparison to Zorba the Greek, of course, was The Last Temptation of Christ. And in college, I had read it, and I found it to be something very fascinating. Fascinating because it got me to think. Got me to think of how much Jesus really gave up for this world. So when this book came, when the movie came out, I was quick to write a rebuttal to all of the people, and they published it in the San Jose Mercury News. Subscription, 1 million? I'd say 500,000. Okay, let's be modest. I was very flattered at the time as a young priest, but I had to write it, and they published it. And, the basic bottom line is that don't be scared to question. Don't be scared to question what's going on. Because in reality, all of it is bizarre. Just like we started off the show today. Imagine we're living in a world where we can obliterate it. We could drop a bomb and in 1 second, 150,000 people are annihilated. And generations to come will grow up with all kinds of diseases. And radiation caused problems. And let me read you a couple sentences. Last Sunday morning, I was awakened by a phone call of a parishioner, her daughter, 25, who was suffering from cancer, was breathing her last at the hospital. And as I raced to Santa Teresa Hospital to give last rites, many thoughts raced through my head, as they usually do at these moments. At the hospital, a young, frail, and tired girl looked at me with a last look of hope. She squeezed my hand to acknowledge my presence. The nurses asked me to leave the ICU ward as they placed more tubes into her nostrils. I came back into the room, but now she was unconscious. The hand that only a few minutes ago had shown signs of life was now limp and cold. I offered some prayers and read scripture into her ear, not certain whether or not she heard. A few moments later, it was not a matter anymore. It did not matter anymore. It was over. A young life, which had not experienced much of life, had ended. And so began the questions. Why? Why her? Why not? Why cancer at all? An injustice has been played out. It wasn't fair. The wrong person was robbed. The deeper question surfaced. What is life all about? Did God take her life? Does God hear our prayers? And for me, as a priest, the role and purpose of my ministry is in question. So, look, I'm having these questions. Is it not fair to imagine that Jesus given the opportunity to walk off of that cross, chose the harder road. And isn't that inspiration for me? Doesn't that tell me that there is a harder road? And so this is what I basically said. And, you know, it was published in the San Jose Mercury News. And people read it. And I got a lot of different kinds of responses to it. Letters to the editors, which were forwarded to me. And it was just a very special time for me. And so when I heard that it was exactly to the date that this movie came out, I said, how appropriate is that with the discussion that we're having right now? In other words, let's allow God to be God and we be people. The other night at our Bible study, we had some fun. We looked at the parable of the rich fool. And we took that sentence where he says, I have amassed all this wealth. I have grain in my barns. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to break. And we circled how many times he says I, or the word me, or my. And isn't it amazing how when things are going good, we're so excited to say that I did it all. And when things are going bad, we say, well, what's wrong with God? Where is God? What's God doing over there? And this is the basic struggle that people have. This is what it comes down to. It's not that people want to really spend too much time thinking about the pros and cons of what they happen to be saying. I have a dear friend of mine who just, when this pandemic came out, why is God doing this? He's a dear friend. He's a very good friend, not very close, but good friend. Genuine. Doesn't mean any harm. But he also meant this very genuine, considering that he's never really given two bits of a thought about God. Never really engaged in any conversation, has no spiritual life. I know, saying this because I do know him. And yet when the chips are all down, where is God? What's wrong with God? And, you know, you can't blame people. It's like this childhood or this adolescent idea that God's going to come out of the cloud and blow COVID-19 from here to eternity, right? Just doesn't work that way. The last temptation of Christ, it gave me an opportunity to rethink these matters, especially because I wanted to share this with you last week, and we just didn't have time, but an incident happened. You know, many of you know, I've shared with you the story of this lady who is in prison right now. And it happened to be her birthday last week. And I was very emotional about it because I wrote her a very long letter and kind of renewed my vow to help out. She's basically forgotten in jail. She's been in jail for 14 years. She had been the victim of domestic violence for 25 years. 25 years! She had been abused physically, emotionally, financially by her husband. I was her pastor for 6 years. There was a few times where I did notice that she was black and blue bruised. And yet I have to say honestly that I was not experienced enough. I do not know what I know now to recognize that kind of abuse. And I just took her word when she said, oh, I fell, I slipped, something hit me. Yeah, that comes with experience, doesn't it? Sadly, we learn those things. But I didn't understand that at the time. I didn't know what was going on. I just took her word for it, that this is the way it is. And she had been abused. She had called the police, 6 different reports. Police came out. One night they took the husband away, who only came back later, even more angry, even more desperate to hurt the wife. And finally she gets to a point where she realizes that the police are of no help, and she realizes that her prayers are not being answered the way she wants to, right? She says, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And she finds somebody who will kill her husband. Yeah. Yeah, this is the kind of people that Father Voskin knows, okay? This is the kind of people I hang with. I'm proud to say that I know her. Anyway, 14 years ago, she tries to kill her husband. And it gets botched. It doesn't work. And she gets picked up on attempted murder charges. So she's been in jail for now 14 years. And I've watched her deteriorate. I've visited her several times from different jail cells, trying to bring that hope of Christ, not by preaching, but by showing that there are people that care, by keeping her in our prayer life. But I also understand that with that prayer needs to be action. And try as we might, those actions have not helped out. We've tried with prayer, and right now it's just not working. And it points to the unfairness of life. Because here's the reality. Here in the United States, there are laws and there are sentence structures. Certain crimes have minimums. Certain crimes have maximum amount of time you can be in jail. The sad reality is if she had killed her husband, she would have been out of jail by now. But the idea that it was a botched, it was an attempted murder, and because it was the man was not rubbed out, he was able to get political clout, including marrying the sister of a prominent politician, and getting the politician to make a lot of noise and keeping this woman in jail. I've read these transcripts. And I'm sorry if I've offended anybody. I know somebody's going to write to me and say, well, you know, murder is murder. Yeah, it is. It's horrible. You don't want anybody to die. I'm not talking about the murder of this man. Please do not misunderstand me. I am not talking nor advocating anything like that, nor taking it lightly. And here's the clincher. She agrees. Yes, she regrets doing it. She's genuinely regretful. She has confessed her sins. All she wants to do now is get out so she could spend her twilight years enjoying her grandchildren freely and not behind bars. Not much to ask of a woman who's been abused and again abused. And there is an unfairness. See, we can always talk about these horrible things, like why did she pick up a gun? Why did she want to kill the husband? But why aren't we talking about what brought her to that point? What happened in the interim? What are we doing about domestic violence now? These are questions. These are questions which are okay to ask. Even more important is, as we're asking them, to understand that we have a responsibility to do something in this life. And so, last week it was an opportunity for me to renew my vow toward these type of incidents, these type of people who are too many, unfortunately, to renew the vow that Jesus said, I have come to the brokenhearted, people who have no hope, and give them hope. I am no Jesus. I am no Christ. Far from it. Far, far from it. I mean, you want to know? Really far from it. But I do know that I am inspired by he who gives me life. I am inspired by the words of Christ, and even more, I am inspired by his actions. When he reaches out to the downtrodden, when he reaches out to the orphans, and when those orphans are sitting there alone, he is their friend, and he demands that of us. And so there I am. I'm now in that position to be able to say, I need to renew my vow. It hasn't worked. I've tried many ways, but I'm renewing my vow to be able to get out there and do something. And I want to challenge you, our listeners. I need help. Is there something you can do? Is there something you can help out with? Please let me know. Even if it's a matter of just writing to her, I'll be happy to share with you her address in prison, to be able to talk to her with a letter. Just warning, you know, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. Well, she has a lot of stuff to say, okay? But if you feel like doing something like that, I just wanted to put it out there, okay? By me putting it out there, it gets me, it gets fire under my feet, too, that I got to do something. So hopefully in the months to come, we'll have some more information, and I'll be happy to share that with you, our listeners. Connecting the dots between all of this, I hope you see how we move from one place to the other, and they're all related because they all talk about the work of the church, which is the work of Jesus Christ. Ah, the piano player is back. We'll let Susie make her announcement. I'll be back. Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you to all of you for all the wonderful notes you send me and for the support and the
Susie here again, you know, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations.
We didn't play
you make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe.
Okay,
we are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships.
It is a great blessing.
At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
I'll have that on the show notes. I am going to be in a town called Yetem, which happens to be the Armenian translation of Eden. It is the garden, and we're going back there. We're going back to the garden to celebrate great blessing. It's going to be fantastic, and I can't wait to share it with you next week as we recap what happened. That's why I didn't want to get too much into it this week. But also, I'm going to give you an idea. You know what happened in Beirut? It's a tragedy that needs assistance right now. The whole idea of Great Blessing is very simple. It's about giving thanks to God for the goodness that you have by bringing your first fruit to the church and having a blessing. And what I'm going to say to you is you probably don't grow grapes, which is fine. Instead, you do something and you make money from it. Bring that money to church. Bring it to church and donate it to the Beirut Fund. I know here in the Western Diocese, all money given to the Beirut Fund goes, 100% of it goes for Beirut relief. And the beauty of it is we have feet on the ground over there, because by virtue of having a Catholicos right in Beirut. So I am going to put a link to WD168. It's the news from this week. There's more information, and I will put a link on the show notes to where you could donate. Please say thanks to God with an expression of your generosity to Beirut. That's how easy it is. Okay, that does it for today's show. I want to thank you for joining us. Please meet us on all the socials and find us here and there on the internet and at the mothership in issues.org. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put together today's show, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
off, but I'm top with it.